Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart.
The sun is out, I guess, but it's quite hot, but supposedly not humid. And let's see, it's 1 p.m. on my time here in New York City, where we just had a parade for the women's soccer team. Yep, the Canyon of Heroes, or how do they call them now? I have to call them the Canyon of Heroines. When they're from here, they're going out to California. And California is where we have this winery that we're going to be talking about. Not all of them are in, the Napa Valley. As a matter of fact, we're going to have, let's see. This is actually in Grass Valley, California, or maybe considered like Nevada City, California. And we're going to, at Nagyar Vineyards and Winery, and we're going to talk with the owner, Mike Nagyar. in the meantime, I'm waiting for him to call in, but in the meantime, let's have a message from one of my the chickens are here. Okay. They're lying low right now. Okay. Let's go right into the show right now. Do I have Mike on now?
Yes, Merle, I'm on.
That's fabulous. Okay, now, I got many questions to ask.
Okay.
Before I even get into the telling me, let's first talk about the vineyards themselves. Tell me about that.
Okay, well, let me see. The first part of the vineyards were planted in 1998. So the vines, some of the older vines are about 20 years old. And the vineyard was planted in three phases. In 1998, we planted about 30 acres of grapes. And then in 2001, 20 acres of additional grapes, and in 2005, an additional 10. So we farm about 60 acres of wine grapes nowadays, and mostly Italian varietals. We planted things like Sangiovese and Barbera and also Rhone varietals, Syrah and Grenache and Petit Syrah, and a few of the Bordeaux varietals, Cabernet Sauvignon and things like Malbec and Cabernet Franc.
So
that's
now if I'm going.
Sorry, go ahead.
So let me ask you. Then if I was like touring the vineyards, would I? Do they all look alike? Or did, would you? Can you see a different color of the grapes or anything?
Well, at this time of year, the vines are basically flourishing. Everything's green, beautifully green, and the clusters or the grapes themselves, that you can actually see them on the vines, hanging on the vines. But at this time of year, they all look alike because they are very small and green. They're not really ripe yet. Now, in about 3 or 4 weeks, they start to ripen, and the red grapes or the dark grapes, the ones that make red wine, will turn color. So they become purplish and blackish, and then the grapes that make white wines, like Viognier, for example, they stay green, but they become more yellowish green, if you like, nice yellow color. So, in general, during the growing season, unless you're an expert, you can't tell one from the other. However, we have the vineyard labeled, if you like. So every block of grapes has a name on it. So if you walk around, you can say, okay, this is a block of Cabernet Sauvignon, or this is a block of Syrah. And, of course, we know
that. Okay, so in other words, each of the groups of grapes are purposely grown for a particular type of wine.
Yes, exactly. In fact, the name of the grape is the name of the wine. So, for example, a Cabernet Sauvignon grape will make Cabernet Sauvignon. Or a Syrah grape will make Syrah. Now, there are grapes, there are wines that are blended, so they might get a little bit of this and a little bit of that and make a blend. But by and large, the names of the grapes on the particular block of vines, by the way, a vine is just like a tree. If you can imagine, if nobody's seen a vine, it's just like a mini tree. So, so the name of the vine is the name of the wine in general.
Now, when you're going through the vineyard, I mean, since they're not, you said that most of it is not really, none of the grapes are ripened?
Right now,
at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The
once they ripe,
sorry.
What I wanted to ask you is once they're ripened, can you actually pick a grape and taste it to know what it's going to taste like?
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, in general, again, I'm being general because everything has an exception. So as soon as they start turning color, if you like, and they're turning purplish or reddish, and you taste them, they'll taste bitter because the sugar levels in the grape are not up there. Now, as they ripen, as you get closer and closer to harvest, which over here starts the beginning of September, the sugar builds up. So if you start tasting the grapes sometime in September before we pick them, then you will taste the sugar. They'll taste very sweet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it depends, again, on the time of year. Right now, if you were to taste a grape that's greenish and very firm, it's going to be very bitter because it's not
ripe.
So
it's not like when people are buying grapes and they're green. It's not those kind of grapes.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me put you on speakerphone for a minute so I can hang on.
Sure.
Let me make sure this works. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, good. Okay, fire away.
Okay, so now when you in terms of the vineyard itself, do you give tours, or when Barbara comes in, it'll be like a private tour, so she could.
We used to do public tours, like big groups of people, but very few people want to walk around in the heat of the day. Remember, at this time of year, we get 90-degree days in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the vines love that because the vines love lots of sunshine and they need the heat. That's why wine grapes grow very well in California because of our weather over here. So we used to do public tours, but not many people want to walk around in the middle of the day. So we don't do, we do public tours on demand, if you like, if a group comes out and once for whatever reason, and I'm around, I'll give them a tour. But Barbara is going to get a private tour, so I'll be around. I'll make sure we get her a hat and a bottle of water. And
that'll be good.
Yeah,
we have a little
gator, a little machine that we can put her on. We're going to sit on and drive around, so it's not going to be all
walking. Oh, good. That's even better.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, that'll be quite interesting. Now, so aside from the vineyard itself, so now you have other parts that are part of this vineyard, which is, I guess, from what I can see, there's an area where you can, like, the bistro, but I got the bistro is closed. Is that what it is?
Yes.
The chef
a little bit of background on the whole thing. So we farm, like I said, 60 acres of grapes. The property is about 100 acres. This includes the winery itself, where we actually make the wines and the barrels are stored. It includes the tasting room. We have a beautiful tasting room, which is located right above a small pond or a small lake, if you like, which we use to water the vineyard with. And the tasting room is fairly large. We call it a tasting room, but it's really a building. We have a big concrete patio, shaded. People can have a picnic and buy a bottle of wine or a glass of wine and enjoy the picnic. Bring a picnic. We do have a commercial kitchen. Unfortunately, our chef has left us and moved. Long story, but so right now we don't have a chef. So our kitchen is closed right now.
Right now you're encouraging people to bring picnic basket.
Yes, we always allow people to bring picnics, even when we had small appetizer plates. Now we also, to help out people that don't know all this and they just show up and they want something to nibble on, we sell things like peanuts and shrink wrapped salami and shrink wrapped cheese and crackers and things like that in the tasting room. But most people like to bring a picnic. We have a beautiful view of the vineyard and the pond or the lake. And we're very kid-friendly, too, so people bring the family or bring the kids and grandkids. And yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So then I also want to ask you about, because I wasn't clear about, you have music on the weekends.
Yes, so here's the music story. First of all, everything I say is on the website, so on our website. So if you go to nashyourvineyards.com and you go to events, or I think it's under events, you'll see upcoming bands and upcoming music. But in the summer months, so starting sometime in April, we have music, complimentary music, every Saturday evening between 6 and 9. So people that live within, 40, 50 miles or less, they'll come out here and we'll have a two-piece band sometime, and we mix it up. So some Saturdays it'll be jazz, some Saturdays it'll be... this easy listening. Now, once a month, in addition to every Saturday between April and sometime in October when the rains come back, every Saturday in June, July, August, and September, one Saturday in June, July, August, September, we have what we call a concert. Now, a concert, you have to buy a ticket before the concert online. You can buy it online or call us. You can also buy food, which we get catered. So, and we usually have something like tri-tip, barbecue, or spare ribs or something. So one Saturday a month, there is a concert, and it's typically a tribute concert to some known band. So, for example, we just had a tribute concert a couple of weekends ago, if I recall, in June, and it was a tribute to the Blues Brothers.
Oh, okay.
We have one upcoming this year. I don't remember them all because there's four. I think we have one, a tribute to the Eagles. And so we typically sell 300-400 tickets for that. We keep it to 400 tickets because of parking issues. So even though we have parking, when it gets over a couple of hundred cars, we just can't park anymore. So that's the music. It's by and large complimentary on most Saturdays in the summer, except for one Saturday a month where it's you have to pay for a ticket.
Now, in terms of the seating, is there, because I can't tell from the site, is there an option that people could take a, like a blanket or their own chair?
Yes,
or
absolutely.
Is this,
yeah. So here's what we do for, on a typical Saturday, we have enough enough tables and chairs, so small tables and chairs, that people can sit at a table and chair and have their picnic while they're listening to the music. But if they want to, if they prefer, excuse me, we have a beautiful lawn area in front of the pond, and they could put down a blanket or the small, you know, low chairs and sit on the lawn and listen to the music. During the concerts, the one concert a month in June, July, August, and September, because of the large number of people, we actually rent extra tables and chairs, so you can still sit at the table with chairs and eat your picnic and have a glass of wine. And then when the music starts, which is usually at 6 o'clock, most people bring lawn chairs and blankets and go sit on the grass in front of the stage, and get up and dance. A lot of dancing goes on during the concerts, by the way. So we do have, you can either bring your chairs and sit on the grass, or we have enough seating for everybody.
Oh, that's great.
And by the way, while you're at it, if you go to YouTube and you type in Najjar Vineyards Concert, so Najjar Vineyards Tribute, you will get videos of past concerts and tributes.
Oh, okay.
So you can, your viewers or people that are listening can get on there and see what it's like during a concert. A lot of fun.
Okay, so do you happen to know what's coming up on this coming Saturday?
Let me hang on a minute. Let me see if I can find a list. Unfortunately, Merle, at my age, if I remember what's going to happen tomorrow or yesterday, it's good. But I think the next one. Hang on a minute. Let me find. No, I don't have it in front of me. This Saturday, we have a duo, a complimentary duo. So this Saturday, there's no concert. I think the concert this month is the last Saturday of the month. And I have a feeling it's Billy
I
Joel.
Can always look at.
I think it's Billy Joel, but I'm not sure. I can go check if you want.
I'm just kind of curious as to, like, so in other words, Barbara will be attending the concert that's going to be at 6 p.m.? Or the music, rather.
So when is Barbara coming?
This coming Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay, so this Saturday, there is music between 6 and 9.
If
you hang on a minute, I can go find what the name of the band is this Saturday, even although I can get on our website, too, and check it out. And it's complimentary this Saturday, but it's not a full-blown concert. It's a duo, and there's still probably going to be 100 people. Typically on a Saturday that's not a concert, we will get 100 to 150 people that show up. So it's still a lot of fun, just not the big 400 people concert. Tribute that I said happens once a month.
Oh, okay. By the way, did you get my last email about my idea with the picnic basket?
I might have, but I get so many emails, Merle, that I don't get a chance to check them every day, so I haven't looked. I didn't know she was coming this Saturday. Now I will happen to be around this Saturday, so this Saturday is fine.
Well, that's perfect, because what I'm trying to see is the shot that I want, you know, amongst other things. I mean, she's going to be doing a lot of interviewing and and taking photos, and I want to get a shot of you and a couple of members of the family sitting at the table with a picnic basket of food to kind of show, and Barbara's there as well. So as if it's kind of like experienced it, if that's a possibility.
Well, I can make myself available, me and my wife. My wife's called Diane, so Diane and I can be here and make sure that we host her, because I'm assuming she'll want to see the vineyard, then we'll tour the vineyards and so on. The big picnic basket is a little trickier. We'd have to find a picnic basket from somewhere.
Or you can make it look like or something. You know, in other words, look like there's a spread on the table, kind of thing. I don't mean a three-course dinner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll probably organize something.
Yes. Okay. Because I think that would be. I think that would also be a great shot. Because I would just want to show when I'm writing the article and the blog and everything else.
Yeah.
That that's something you could do. Not necessarily that you could do with the family, but, one of the things.
What time do you expect, does she expect to show up?
I didn't tell her what time, but now that I know that the music is at 6 o'clock, that she would probably, I guess if she shows up at about 3 o'clock, you could get everything done, right? For her to,
She needs to show up early enough.
Between seeing the vineyard and doing the tasting.
Yeah, because once the music starts, I get very busy. I get personally involved. Well,
right.
I don't, and I can make myself available, but I just can't sit down and ignore the rest of the customers.
But you won't just... in terms of the wine tasting itself, how late does that open till?
Well, the music goes till 9, and we can taste during the music, but it tends to be chaotic.
We won't do it then.
we need to do the tasting and the tour before the music starts.
Okay, which is fine. That's
yeah,
fine.
If she shows, by the way, if she shows up at 4 at the latest, we can still, we'll still have a couple of hours to, you know, tour the vineyards, half an hour, tastings, another half hour, maybe an hour, and then sitting down,
okay,
and the music starts. So I think we should be,
well,
be
even
okay.
But even if she gets there earlier, she'll be able to kind of walk around a bit and take photos.
Yeah.
You know, that she could do that and take a whole bunch of photos as well.
Now, the other thing you might want to tell her is that we shut everything down. Well, not quite, but we turn the music, the band stops playing at 9 sharp because even though we're out in the country and we have a lot of land, music carries a long way, so we like to keep it after 9 o'clock. We don't want any music carrying on to the neighbors. And then the other thing you might want to remind her, that the days are getting shorter, although because she lives in California, she probably knows this.
Yeah.
So after, I think nowadays, after 8 o'clock, the light starts to dim outdoors. So,
okay.
So keep that in mind. By 10 o'clock at night, we've actually shut the place down. Everybody's gone. So,
okay.
Is she driving back home, or is she going to be staying somewhere?
Yeah, she's going to drive. She's going to wind up driving back home she would rather, in terms of the tasting, what I want like somebody to do is like show her how one does a tasting. In other words, not just that you drink it.
Yeah.
I mean the typical thing of the swishing around the mouth, the nose, you know, smelling, and that you actually don't drink the wine.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can help with that. I'll be around.
Yeah, because I know from my own experience of doing wine tastings that I always had a spittoon.
Yeah.
Because that one or two drops that got down my throat gave me enough to taste the wine at the back of my throat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was able to taste a lot of wines. So let me also ask you a question. I see all these wines listed here. Just by looking at all the names of the wines, would I know whether it's a white wine or a red wine just by looking at the names?
Only if you're familiar with the names. If you aren't, no, you wouldn't. So we have a little bit about the wines. We grow 17 different varietals of grapes. So we make a lot of wines. We're a little unusual for a small winery in the number of grapes that we grow, the number of varieties of grapes that we grow, and it's because we started off as farmers and growers, and we got into wine later. And we planted certain varietals for other people when they were buying our grapes. So when we got into the wine business 10 years ago, we had all these grapes. So we have a lot of different wines to offer. However, having said that, on any particular day or Saturday, we have 7 complimentary wines to taste. So you can't taste all our wines. We just have too many. So we put about 7 different wines on the board in the tasting room, and people will sample about 7 of them. And because they're written on the board, they're typically put in an order. For example, you taste the white wines first if there are some that day. And then if a blush or a rosé gets tasted after, and then the red wines.
Right.
So I'll walk Barbara through that. help her kind of say, okay, this is what this wine is. This is what the, is it a sweet wine? Is it a semi-sweet? Is it a dry wine? Is it a food wine? If it's a food wine, what do we pair it with? I can go through that with her.
Okay. Now,
is she a wine person or is she a beginner?
I don't know how much wine she drinks, but I don't think she's, I don't know that she's done many wine tastings. I know that in our travels, well, wait a minute, well, she must have done some because I had sent her to, and I can't think of the name of the town, it's toward the north of in California, that it's like has several wines in one area.
Yeah.
I would have to go to my blog and see. So, in other words, I've had sent her to wineries. So I'm sure
she's
done tastings.
Okay.
You know.
She's somewhat knowledgeable. I can handle it from here.
Okay.
We used to do private tastings for groups as well, and I used to host them. I don't do that anymore. I have employees that do that now, but I can walk her through the wines. You don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that'll be great. That'll be great.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, if I was kind of doing this, in other words, and the other question I wanted to ask, it's like when I go out and somebody says, you know, you want a glass of wine, and I basically say, start off that it has to be a white wine because I think I'm allergic to red wine. So I ask for white wine, but I never just say white wine. I have to kind of describe what I want. You know, something like that's buttery and doesn't feel that alcohol in the back, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But even when they choose, it doesn't necessarily mean that wine is going to taste like the same one I had a month or two ago just because it's a Pinot Gris, you know, Grigio, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's that kind of a thing. So... It could taste like if you pick a wine like a Rhone. Rhone wines are they white or?
Well, Rhone, the nomenclature Rhone or Italian has to do with where those grapes originally were planted. You know, obviously all the grapes that we have here are planted here in California, but the original varietals that are planted in the Rhone Valley in France are the most known is Syrah, the Syrah grape, the Grenache,
right,
which is another varietal, Grenache grape. Petite Syrah is another one. Those are all reds. Now, they also grow white varietals. So in the Rhone Valley in France, originally the ones that are the most common is Viognier, which is a relatively obscure varietal that does very well in this part of the world, in California, but originally originated there. Same thing with it. When I say Italian, for example, the more a famous or prominent varietal is Sangiovese, which comes from the Tuscany region in Italy. The other one that we grow here is called Barbera, which grows in the northern part of Italy, Piedmont. So they could, to answer your question, they could be white grapes or white wines, or they could be red wines. And in fact, it gets even more interesting because they could be sweet in the sense that there's you can taste the sugar or it's a sweet wine. It could be semi-sweet, so it's barely sweet, or it can be dry. When wine people say dry, it means they're not sweet wines. They are They are dry, and they are mostly food wines. People get into wine tasting because it's an infinite, completely infinite hobby. It just, there's no limits as to when you can really get to know it. Now, the downside of that is it's very complicated and confusing for beginners. Once you get into it and you've done a lot of tasting, then you get the hang of it. But in the beginning, it's very, very confusing.
We train our
staff, by the way, in the tasting room to be able to help people that come in, and maybe they don't know their grapes, or maybe they haven't done much wine tasting. They'll walk them through wine tasting, and in fact, I enjoy that part personally.
Well, for instance, now suppose I said to you, I like a sweet wine. What would you? A white sweet wine.
Okay.
What would you choose?
Well, if you limit me to the wines that we make here, I don't make. We do. We have a sweet dessert white wine, which I would recommend, but it's very sweet. It's a dessert type wine, and so you typically have it after dinner with a dessert, like creme brulee or some creamy, nice, sweet dessert. If you tell me that you're not quite ready for a dessert wine, but you'd like something on the sweet side, if you like, or semi-sweet, then I would recommend a wine made out of the muscat grapes. It tends that particular wine would be semi-sweet, so it won't have the acidity that a dry wine has. It'll be much smoother because when a wine has sweetness to it, it just tastes smoother on the palate. But then if you tell me you want a wine that you're going to have with food, let's say that you're having some cheeses or crackers, and you're having a salad, or maybe a light fish dish. I would recommend a dry white wine. By dry meaning not sweet at all.
What I personally find is that if I have wine and I start tasting the wine and I put it down, and if I starting to eat and I have the wine with whatever it is that I'm eating, I don't like the wine anymore.
Oh, is that
it
right?
It interferes. Yeah. I find that if I'm having wine, I want the wine like before I eat, or after I eat, or something, but not with the food. It seems to change not just the palate of the food, but it changes, I guess, it changes the taste of the wine, that I'm no longer enjoying the wine itself.
Well, you haven't found the right pairing of wine and food.
that could be.
The theory anyway, is that if you pair the right wine with the right food, each is supposed to enhance the other one.
Okay.
In theory. Now, everybody is different. In fact, that's one of the problems with wine tasting. Wine is very, very personal. I might like a wine, and you might hate it, and vice versa. So it's very difficult to generalize with wine. However, and by the way, the other thing about wine is everybody has a different palate. By palate, I mean tolerance for things like acidity, tolerance for sweetness, everybody's very different. So, but in general, if you pair the right food with the right wine, in general, the experience of both should be more pleasant.
Okay.
Now,
I'll try that the next time. Now, you're sending me this particular, are you sending me a white wine and a red wine?
Yes. What I've done is, I think Victoria sent it yesterday or the day before, so you should be getting it
right
soon. You're getting a bottle of a white called Viognier. Viognier is a white grape that makes a wine called Viognier. Everybody knows Chardonnay, and we don't make a Chardonnay because our weather here is too warm on our site. Chardonnay likes cool weather to make good wine. Whereas Viognier is a Rhone varietal of grapes, and it likes hot weather. We're in a warm climate zone here. So I sent you that.
Okay.
It's a food wine, so it's not sweet. When you open the bottle, you should chill a little bit, not too cold, and have a little bit of food with it. Now, you could also drink it on its own if you like. So I'm gonna send you a bottle of that, and then I sent you a bottle of a Cabernet Sauvignon, which I mentioned to you the last time. We have a small distributor in New York somewhere that sells this Cabernet Sauvignon. I'm not sure who he sells it to because he's an independent distributor. So I sent you a bottle of something called a Route 49 Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh, okay.
And so that's a red wine. Again, preferably with food, but again, not necessarily. And hopefully you'll like them both.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good to me. I've done even wine tastings. I was in on a press trip in Italy.
Yeah.
We did a wine tasting there, and I was at a press trip in South Africa.
Oh yeah,
and doing a wine tasting there. It was interesting because the wines in South Africa not only were good, but if you bought them in the United States, they weren't as expensive as the wines here.
Oh, is that right?
Now I don't go purposely to a store to get a bottle of wine. I happen to like sake also, so that's are you affected by the Sierra Mountain, the water from the Sierra Mountains? Is that the part of this? Are you getting
well?
That?
We are definitely in the Sierra Mountain foothills. We're not quite at the at the higher elevations, but we are at the foothills. We're at about 1,000 feet to 2,000 feet over here. And we do get our water from reservoirs in the mountains. In this county, in this particular county, they have reservoirs that store snow melt, and then the water goes down canals, and we buy water from a canal that has Sierra Mountain snow melt, if you like.
The soils
The type of grapes and the quality of the wine, the water, the weather, that's what the French use as the term terroir. It's basic combination of the weather, the soils, just the whole environment, which basically creates the environment for a grape to grow and make wine. Every site, virtually every vineyard, has its own terroir based on the combination of those things. So,
Okay.
By the way, while I'm at it, if you don't mind, let me give you my take on pairing food and wine.
Go ahead.
Especially since you have found you don't like to eat and drink wine at the same time.
Right.
So I've basically boiled down a very complicated topic to some simple rules, if you like. Because when we do private tastings, people always bring up the topic. And the main rule that I try and explain people to remember is to try and pair a food and wine combination based on the intensity of those of that food and that wine. Let me explain intensity, and then I'll use some examples. By intensity, I mean how intense the wine is. Is it very dark red? Is it somewhat tannic or acidic, if you like? Some people say tannic, some people say acidic. They're different things. And is the food intense and heavy? And let me give you an example. So if you do, if you go out to a restaurant and eat an ossobuco, Italian ossobuco, which tends to be a winter shank, if you know what an ossobuco is?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Foods, I know.
Okay. It's heavy. It's got quite a bit of fat to it. It's a winter, I call it a winter food, right in December or January. So that's an example of a intense, heavy food. On a food like that, you got to pair it with an intense, heavy wine. So I would recommend a heavy Cabernet Sauvignon or a tannic Cabernet Sauvignon. I would recommend a Petit Syrah or a Syrah, a nice Syrah. And the reason you need to pair the wine to the food that are both in the same, what I call it, intense or heavy, is because they complement each other. Neither the wine will overtake the intensity of the food, nor will the food overtake the intensity of the wine. That's very important. Because if you pair a ossobuco or a pepper steak or a roast beef with a wimpy, what I call a wimpy wine, like, for example, a rosé or a white wine, or even a light red like a Grenache, the food will overtake the flavors and the intensity of the wine, and you're really not going to taste the wine. The opposite is true. Okay, the opposite is true. Let's say that you have a nice filet of fish, like a salmon or a trout, and it's being cooked in some white wine and lemon, very light, and butter, nice buttery. And now if you go pair this with a heavy wine, a heavy red wine, or even a heavy white wine, the wine will overtake the flavors and the taste of the light fish. So for that fish, you need a light white wine. Now, you can have a fish with red sauce, with a sauce that has onions in it and has tomatoes, and it has a heavy fish. It has a sauce that's pretty heavy. Now, you need a heavier white wine or even a light red wine. So I'm not sure I'm making myself understood.
I understand.
Yeah, so that's what I tell people is, by and large, when you're pairing wine and food, never mind red goes with fish, red goes with meat, white goes with fish, because the sauces can change everything. If you have a fish stew or a chopino, that has tomatoes in there, and onions, and garlic.
Right.
You know, pairing it with a white wine is a waste of time because you'll completely overtake, the food will completely overtake the flavors of the wine. So what I tell people is when you're pairing, think about intensity. Don't necessarily go with, you know, red with meat, because let's take meat. If you've got a very light veal and you've got it with lemon sauce or a white, you know, just a light sauce, even though it's meat, if you pair it with a Cabernet Sauvignon, the Cabernet Sauvignon will completely overtake the veal.
Right.
Anyway,
okay.
That's my piece.
So in other words, I should have a white wine if I'm having salmon with not a whole bunch of sauces, that I'm just putting dill on it or whatever, a little salt and that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So for that, I should have I should have a, you know, a nice white wine.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, that same salmon is cooked in a heavy sauce with onions and, you know, tomato sauce and maybe a little bit of garlic. Now you want a little bit heavier white or maybe a light red with that.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Now I get it. So when it comes to my having wine, because I favor white wines, I just won't have wine with the foods that are too heavy to avoid having any red wine.
Again, everything I say, by the way, is true. But personal, my wife, for example, my wife, Diane, basically does not like wines that aren't sweet. She just likes sweet wines. And no matter what we eat, she will have sweet wine with it. Not a cloyingly sweet wine, not a dessert wine, but a sweet wine. So
right.
Personal preferences always overtake. However, the pairing issue is a key one because a lot of people say, well, what do I pair with this and what do I pair with that? I'm going to barbecue chicken tonight. What should I pair with the chicken? Or I'm going to make a pasta with meatballs tonight. What should I pair with a pasta and meatballs? So what I do is I default to this, you know, pair of wine that has the same intensity. But it could very well be that you personally just like white wines. And so I'm just saying that if you pair white wine, a light white wine with a heavy meal, you really won't taste the wine much. The meal,
okay.
the heavy meal will overtake your senses. By the way, let me give you another piece of information,
sure.
Which a lot of people, you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Everything you taste in a wine, most things you taste in a wine and smell in a wine come through your nose.
Yes.
It doesn't come through your mouth. If you have a cold, as you probably know, or if you hold your nose and you try and taste something, you'll only taste four things. You'll taste sugar, which is sweetness. You'll taste saltiness. You'll taste acidity, which is like a lemon.
Right.
And you'll taste bitterness. Bitterness is a tea bag that's been left in the water too long, in a hot water too long. That's all you can taste with your mouth. Everything else comes through the nose. And that's very important because that's when you're tasting wine, you actually, people that are good at it and have done it for a long time will slurp the wine. Winemakers will slurp, which is kind of disgusting, but the reason is because they want to get those aromas to your nose. So keep that in mind when you're tasting. Smelling the wine, I'll go through that with Barbara when she comes smelling the wine is just as important as tasting. In fact, even more important. When Barbara comes out, I'll walk her through how to taste wine, and that is, and that's because, again, most of what you taste in your mouth is because those aromas have found their ways to your, to your nose.
Okay, I know. For instance, if you put a red wine in front of me and I put my nose to it, even like if I was blindfolded, I would know it was a red wine.
Yes.
There's a distinct
absolutely. Yeah.
Aroma about the red wine that I can always detect.
Yeah, most red wines too. Yeah.
It's not bad.
Red
wine. It's good. It's just a particular aroma that it has.
Red wines tend to lean towards blackberry, blueberry, dark fruit aromas, if they have any aromas. White wines tend to lean towards things like strawberries, raspberries, sometimes oranges, and so that's what you're picking up. You're picking up the dark berry aromas versus the orangey, apples, fruity aromas in white wine, typically in white wine. But again, all this is typical. It's not necessarily absolute.
Okay. I have to tell, I mean, I'm jealous about her trip, but there's nothing I could do.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time you're on the West Coast.
Yeah. Well, I've done, as I said, I've done a tremendous amount of California and gone to wineries and, you know, things like that. And I think, I'm not sure if I had told you, like, that Kikkoman is out there. They moved out there because of the water.
Yeah.
And the sake place, Gaikakan, is out there also because of the water.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
You know, so I guess there must be something to it that makes it better or whatever.
Well, our water is because it's snow melt. We at home, we don't actually drink bottled water. We drink well water. We have a well, and the water is very, very good. I'd never thought about it, but I guess it's true.
Now, do you ever make, and I'm trying to remember what they're called, not winter wines. What's the ice wines? Is that what they call them?
Yeah, it's the Canadians do that a lot. By the way, we're originally Canadian. We moved to the States 40 years ago, I guess. But yeah, they make ice wine. It's wine that it's grapes that are grown in very, very cold weather, and the grapes are picked after they freeze, and that's why it's called ice wine. It's very expensive because you don't get a lot of yield from frozen grapes. You don't get a lot of juice once they're frozen.
Right.
But, it's a very high alcohol wine. We don't grow it here,
obviously,
for obvious reasons. We're in California, but you have to be in cold weather to do it.
Yeah, I got that. I've tried a few of those as well. That's probably because I've made enough trips to Canada, too.
Is that right?
Yes, I have done a lot of traveling.
Good for you.
In my years.
I actually went on your website. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got to a point where someone says, well, why don't you go travel someplace? I go, I don't even know where I want to go. I haven't been, you know, it is. But when this came up, I said, oh, well, here's a place that probably doesn't get enough publicity, this area, so I'm going for this one, you know, to write about this one,
Relatively unknown here. Although we're getting Well, we're getting known a little bit more, the Sierra foothills, if you like, the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. At least for California people, they seem to know who we are. I mean, I don't mean our winery or our vineyard, but I'm talking about the area. But we are way, way behind in terms of being known behind the Napa and Sonoma. Napa and Sonoma are the big ones over here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So what time do you think Barbara is? Can you ask her to call me or send me an email as to about
the
time so I can expect her?
Yeah, I could probably just tell her because I was because what I was thinking of having her do is stop through, make a stop in Grass Valley to go to this place called Marshall's Pasties.
Okay.
And then she could also, I'm asking them to have her, for her to taste a couple of them there, and then take some and bring them to the winery as part of, you know, a picnic basket or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I'd be careful with that, Merle, if you don't mind. We don't let anybody bring outside alcohol over here for a variety of reasons. One of them...
No, there's no alcohol.
Oh, you said bring some wine?
No, bring some of these pasties.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said wine. Okay. No, that's fine. The food's fine.
Oh, no, what I said to bring the pasty to the winery. That's why we heard wine.
Reason I bring it up is we are only allowed to pour our own wines here.
Oh, sure. No, she won't be. No,
yeah.
I'm not. No, this is, this thing, it says Cornish pasties.
It's like a small meat pie.
I was trying to explain it to her. I don't know what to compare it to. It's not
a
calzone.
Compare
it to a calzone. It's not, you know.
Yeah, it's what I would call a pie. It's almost like a pie. It's a Welsh or Irish pie. The apparently in the during the gold mine rush, the gold rush. The mines, owners of the mines up in Grass Valley in Nevada City, used to bring people over, mostly Welsh and Irish people, to work the mines. And so they brought the pie making, knowledge and custom to Grass Valley in Nevada City. And they call them pasties. They didn't call them pies.
Okay.
So that's why Nevada City and Grass Valley are known for their pasties.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they're actually pretty good. They, if you can imagine a British pie that's made out of meat and onions and potatoes, and it's a little like that.
Yeah. No, I can think. I'm trying to think of something that's kind of comparable to that as well. I understand, you know, I got what they are. That's why I thought it would be interesting, you know, for her to bring some over there.
Yeah.
You know, and I might comment and say, if you're passing through Grass Valley, you know, and you want to bring something, that would be a... You know, but in terms of the article that I'm writing, the whole focus of this one article is the vineyards. That's what I'm going for. Immediately, in other words, once I get all the information, you know.
Okay. She should spend some time in Nevada City. Although it's going to make a long day for her. It's a beautiful. Nevada City and Grass Valley are two sister towns that are about 3 miles apart, and they're both very cute.
Okay.
They're old mining towns that have been reconfigured as as tourist attractions, and they have Victorian homes and you know, nice stores and that kind of thing. They're a bit of a destination for people that live in San Francisco and Sacramento.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I still have, I want her to go to a place, something animal place, and also to the something mining state park or something.
There's a couple of mines you can actually tour.
Right.
I know the state park, but I don't know the animal place.
Yeah, that's what I found. I thought that's also, you know, just something interesting. You know, listen, the more things I could write about the area, and this is going to be a series of articles.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I don't think I can, like, in other words, in terms of, like, this place, animal place, to write an entire, I tend to like to write at least 1,000 words when I'm doing a piece. So, you know, so that's, you know, and yours may go beyond 1,000. I'm sure it probably go beyond 1,000 words, but that's okay. That's what I'm privileged to do in the paper I write for.
That's what you know how to do. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, no, I don't have somebody that says to me, you're limited to a certain amount of words. I'm not going, I can't, because I, you know, I already deal with one of those things, too. So I have to shorten one to like 500 words for one publication. And, you know, I have to, okay, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, this I got the great stuff. Is there anything that you wanted to add, by the way?
No, not really. When Barbara's here, we'll spend time with her, and I'm sure she'll carry to you the conversation and the photos. And so, no, that's fine. We appreciate you reaching out to us. The only other thing is when you've done your articles, if you can copy my daughter-in-law, Mary, and she'll give you credit.
Oh, everybody will get everything.
Yeah.
What'll happen is when the article goes into the Queen's Times, you could read the Queen's Times online.
Okay.
Even though it's a hard copy newspaper, but you could read it online, and when you could always print it out just from that, from the page.
Yeah,
that it's
we
on.
Can do that if you let us know when all that happens. And and then because Mary is my daughter-in-law is our marketing person and our social media person, and she does a very good job of spreading the word. So that would help.
Okay. As a matter of fact, what I'm going to do in a little while after we finish the show, I'm going to copy the link and send it off to her.
That would be good. Yeah.
So that because I'll be putting this on my Facebook page.
Okay.
And then she can take the link and put it wherever you want. You could put it on your Facebook page, or you could put it on, it's whatever you want to do to give yourself publicity, that's all.
Well, I appreciate that, okay.
Okay. All right, well, I can't say I'll see you soon, but Barbara will at least.
Okay, Merle, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, same here. And maybe I'll go out and buy a bottle of wine later. I'll wait for yours.
Okay, you should get it any day.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks again.
All right, have
Bye-bye.
A great day. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I am going to end the show now. So for everybody, when you listen to it, have a great day, evening, afternoon, or whatever. whenever you decide to listen to the show, if you weren't listening.